Best friends, I'm Tabby.
And I'm Caitlin, and today we have a very special guest on the show, Mae Corland. So I'm going to read you a little bio. This is from Entangled Publishing's website. Mae Corland is a Korean-American attorney and writer born in Seoul and adopted into New York. From there, she ran away from winter and studied in Florida at Rollins College and the University of Miami. Due to a variety of questionable decisions, she currently lives in the cold again with her partner, children, and a goldfish who outlived them all. When not writing, you can find her asleep or clutching her latte machine. Relatable.
That's so true, so valid.
Mae writes award-winning children's and young adult books under Meredith Ireland. And Five Broken Blades is basically her debut adult novel, and it's high fantasy, really, really cool book. So we're going to also read for you the back of the book. It's the season for treason. The King of Yusan must die. The five most dangerous liars in the land have been mysteriously summoned to work together for a single objective, to kill the God King Jun. He has it coming. Under his merciless immortal hand, the nobles flourish while the poor and innocent are imprisoned, ruined, or sold. And now each of the five blades will cup for him. Each has tasted bitterness from the hired hitman seeking atonement, a lovely assassin who seeks freedom, or even the prince banished for his cruel crimes. None can resist the sweet, icy lure of vengeance. They can agree on murder, they can agree on treachery. But for these five killers, each versed in deception lies in betrayal. It's not enough to forge an alliance. To survive, they'll have to find a way to trust each other, but only one can take the crown. Let the best liar win.
That intro goes hard.
It
It's the
does.
season for treason.
It's the season for treason. And don't you forget it. And joining us now is Mae Corland.
Welcome, Mae. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to chat with you about your new book, Five Broken Blades. But first, we wanted you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a Korean-American adoptee. I was born in Seoul, and then I grew up in New York City. I went to law school thinking that I was going to just be a lawyer. And then I had my babies, and who are not babies, like they're gonna both be middle schoolers, so yeah, that's a thing. When they were little, I wanted to be there. I wanted to stay home with them, and in order to stop myself from losing my mind, I started writing books. And I'd always written, but not anything to pursue publishing. And then it got to a point where I was like, okay, well, why not? Let's try it. Let's see how it goes. And that was like 9 years ago, I guess. And so that's been it since. I've been a full-time writer for a while now.
That's so awesome. And kids are such a good inspiration for that too. And it's a fun way to, you know, kind of interact with them as well. And I'm sure you take a lot of inspiration from your kids. But what was your like direct path to publication?
So I did children's literature first. I had, funny enough, I had an adult romance. That's where I got my first agent, was Beth Fillon. I think I might have just butchered her name, but she did DV Pit on Twitter, and I did my pitch and I got agents interested, which was super cool. I had written manuscripts before that were terrible, like Hunger Games knockoffs set underwater. That was one of them. There was like a really bad, like kind of Rapunzel retelling, I think. But you know, not good. So then eventually I wrote a decent book. But at the time, that was about 8 or 9 years ago, the adult space was really not nearly as welcoming to diverse voices as it is today. But the YA space was. So she's like, what do you think about going into children's literature, into young adult? And I said, yeah, you know, let's give it a try. And so I wound up doing the Jasmine Project, which was IP, which means that the publisher comes up with the idea and they audition writers to write it. So that was my first book. Then my second was Everyone Hates Kelsey Miller, which was also YA. The third was contributing on an anthology called You Are Here, which is like gotten all the stars and all the awards. And that was like so incredible because I'm on these Zoom calls with people who've won Caldecott, people who've won Newbery Awards. And like, then it's just like me sitting there and I'm like, oh, okay. What if we put it in Orlando? You know, like I didn't have very much to contribute. But then I did Emma and the Love Spell, which is middle grade, because I wanted to write something that my kids could read. And so that came out in January, I want to say. And then, Five Blades came along to transition into new adult and to do epic, you know, high fantasy. And I was like, yeah, I would love to, because adults was the original space that I had looked to be in all those years ago.
That's awesome. Yeah. So do you think you're going to continue to write like for more of the mature audience, or do you think you'll stay more with young adult, or maybe both?
No, so I'm fully into adult.
Okay.
At this point.
Awesome.
We are actually, she just greenlit my new series idea. So I'm super excited. I can't say anything
That's
about
awesome.
It, but I'm super excited about it.
Oh, awesome. That is exciting. Well, yeah, thanks for sharing all that. That's an awesome, like, I didn't know all of that about your career.
What an incredible journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting, because when I don't know, like I would never have seen where this would have gone when I started.
Yeah.
I think I might have been discouraged, but I do like all the twists and turns that it's taken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Open some
really...
new pathways for you. And
oh, absolutely. And you know, it's all a great learning experience. None of it is ever wasted.
For sure. We did also want to ask who some of your favorite authors are to read, and whether you feel like they influence your writing at all.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, I have so many favorite authors. Okay, so for the adult space, for the fantasy space, I absolutely love Fonda Lee. She wrote the Jade City trilogy, which is Jade Legacy, Jade War, and Jade City. Just incredible, like having electricity in a high fantasy is unusual. Usually everybody's mm-hmm. in robes and swords. So I loved how she made it a little more modern. And it's just like this sweeping tale. And I loved it. I love Rebecca Roanhorse. I will read every single thing that she puts out. I have Mirrored Heavens, which is the last of the Black Sun trilogy, sitting downstairs. And I'm so excited to dive into it. And then I loved Leigh Bardugo's Ninth House and Hellbent. I thought that they were both so inventive. I loved Hellbent and this idea of having this hell gateway in Yale. It was just
one of my favorite
so
series.
Cool. Loved it. Loved it.
Yes.
Loved it. For YA, gosh, I could, like, seriously, I could go on all day, because then my friends also publish in YA. So it's, you know, Karen McManus, I love, and she's one of the most genuine, nicest people that I've ever met. And One of Us is Lying was so much fun, and I had been able to read an early copy of it, which was super cool. But yeah, I guess I'll stop there, because otherwise I'll just
Well, that's awesome. Those are like giving me new authors to read, because I haven't heard of some of them, so I'm always looking for more books.
They're fantastic. Yeah,
awesome. I did want to ask, kind of, how, without giving anything away, how you would describe your new book, Five Broken Blades.
So we love to say it's Game of Thrones or Six of Crows meets Kill Bill. So because it has six narrators, but it has five liars/killers who are recruited to kill a king, and the complication in that, I mean, which is always difficult, but the complication in that is that he is immortal, so which makes it a lot harder for five people who are all mortal to go try to achieve this. But there's a lot at stake for them, both in failing and in succeeding. It's I've heard it described as like Six of Crows, but with murder. And I think that that's pretty accurate, like where the end game is not to steal something, but to kill somebody. So I think that is actually pretty accurate.
And each of your characters, they were just so like intricate and well thought out. And, you know, there were times where I was laughing and I was, you know, feeling all the feelings that they were feeling. And so I just feel like they were just such well done characters too.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your decision to make your main character, Sora, have hearing loss.
So I have that hearing loss. What I wrote is the exact thing that I have. So, and like right now it's ringing and other times I don't notice it. So let's see, during like the height of COVID, all of a sudden, it was kind of ringing as I went to bed. Then I woke up with the worst vertigo that I've ever had. I've never had vertigo. I don't recommend, 0 stars. It's so bad. I had to crawl to my bathroom because the horizon was shifting, you're on a ship almost. Oh, it was so bad. But I also had lost my hearing completely in my left ear. Just a random virus had just wiped it out. And then I was okay, well, it'll come back. And so about 50% of it returned, I would say. I had a doctor friend prescribe an antibiotic, and I'm I'm sure that that's, all it is. Well, it never came back. And I didn't want to go to an ENT during that time, because if you recall, you're that's who you go see if you have COVID potentially. You know, I live in New York and it was so scary. So I'm no, I'll just deal with it at home. So they were then eventually when I did go, they were it's permanent. You're not going to get it back. So I wanted to have a character with, the same disability that I have. You don't see it a ton in fantasy, or in literature in general. So I wanted to have it and have it be somebody who wasn't born that way, because that's not the way I experienced life.
Well, first of all, that is so scary.
It was so weird.
I could not imagine just waking up not being able to hear out of one ear one day. So that's terrifying. But yeah, I do think it was really cool to have, like you said, have a character like that, because a lot of the time I think in fantasy type novels, you always have these people who just, are perfect in every single mm-hmm. possible way and nothing bad ever happens. And so it really does just humanize the character a little bit more.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And we also know that you took a lot of inspiration from various global myths and cultures when writing this book. So tell us a little bit about your research process for that.
Oh my gosh. So so some of it is from just me traveling around, but some of it is spending a lot of time on Google, having, the 100 tabs open, that kind of thing. Some of it has been reading. I was actually supposed to, so interestingly, I was supposed to publish a second middle grade that was heavily Korean mythology, but in contemporary Brooklyn. So the research that I did for that actually helps me with Five Blades. You kind of cannibalize one thing for the other as you go through manuscripts. So I did have a basis for, what I wanted to put in here. But then I did a ton of research on Korean history, because it's a strange thing being a transnational adoptee, because on the one hand, I was born there. I lived there. I was adopted from there. I, could have Korean citizenship because that's where I was born. And then on the other hand, culturally, though, I'm not Korean, but appearance-wise, I am. It's a very strange little dynamic. And it's something that I wanted to bring into the book, this East meets West. So it's not entirely inspired by ancient Korea, although there are definitely elements in there. So for some of the cities, Taemnaeki, the capital of Ulsan, is actually inspired by Atlantis.
Okay.
Having those concentric circles, those rings, that's straight out of Atlantis. So it was really awesome to be able to borrow from all of these different inspirations, so that it wasn't exactly one thing, because I'm not.
Sure.
Yeah. And I really love how it came together too. And that's even, I'm sure it's really cool to see it in this book form, see yourself in this story, basically.
Yeah, I love like even when they're eating, right? Like so sometimes they're eating with chopsticks, sometimes they're eating with forks and knives, and it just kind of hopefully seamlessly, I don't know, switches between the two, the way
Yeah.
that would.
Well, and food was, I mean, obviously a very, very big part of this book too, and just the way you interwove it into the story. So why did you choose food as a way to illustrate the cultures that are inspired by this fantasy world or in this fantasy world?
Okay, so whenever I travel, one of the, I wouldn't say the first thing, because like that's usually plane tickets, but
Yeah.
the first thing that I'm looking at is like, what is there to eat? Like, I'm the type of person where if somebody's like, oh, we're gonna go to this restaurant, I will pull up the menu to like see what they have and like have my little order ready to go and like be totally thrown off if they don't have that particular dish that day. If they're like, no,
Yep.
we're out of that, it's like, oh no.
Plan
But I spent a week and a half researching this.
my whole day around this.
Yes, I plan this. Like, what do you mean you don't have artichokes? But because I'm, I guess, food centered, I really wanted to bring in the different delicious things that I love. But I also think that food says so much about a place, and it says so much about a person. So they talk about potatoes, right? Like, so potatoes originally came from the Andes. So they would be grown on a mountainside. So the potatoes in Yusan are grown on the side of the Tengon Mountains. So it's setting there, and like, how would you get it over there? Is it a delicacy? So are you rich in eating one thing, or are you poor in eating something totally different? Then the different regions are going to have like the out and fallow, they're not going to have the access to seafood, but in Temnyaki, they're going to be heavily seafood because that's where they are.
Sure.
So it just says so much about like commerce and class and tastes also. And then it gives me the opportunity to also talk about food that I really like. So it had a lot of purposes.
That's
And
awesome.
that's, yeah, that's so cool because I feel like that's something I wouldn't normally like notice or pick up on, but I think subconsciously we do because there are those sort of things that you mentioned, like
The
is
subtle
it available
nuances,
to
right?
yeah
Yeah.
lower classes, and that's not something you like consciously think of, but it is very effective. That's cool. So another thing that we really love on this podcast besides food is morally gray characters. And so we wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit about how you balance your morally gray characters in a way that makes readers still empathize with them.
So, I mean, personally, when I'm reading, I think that morally gray characters are the most interesting. I love having a character who can rationalize things to themselves in such a way that you nod along going, yeah, I think it was probably fine to hunt people. I love how novels in general can make you question your own moral compass because you're nodding along going, yeah, we should probably kill them. And you're like, wait a second.
You've
Wait a
suspended
minute.
your disbelief too much.
Let's scale this back. Like, maybe this isn't the only way to solve this problem. But then also, so I think the key to making a morally gray character relatable, likable, the way you want to root for them is they have to love something, and they have to love something so deeply that they are willing to sacrifice everything else to get it. So it's also deeply motivated in love.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
I agree. And I think that's something, again, something that I don't necessarily realize that is working on me, like psychologically when I'm reading about these characters. But yeah, I agree. That
Well,
is
it's
why I
funny
root for them.
too that you mentioned like these are not things that I would agree with like in a real life setting, but in the book, I'm like, heck yeah, that makes sense. We were just talking about this on a previous episode that like there are a lot of characters that we want to keep them in the book realm only because if we were to have met them like out walking on the street or on a dating profile or whatever, we'd be like, you need to be in jail.
Institutionalized.
But I love them in books.
Yes, they're my favorites. The most interesting, like you said.
So your book comes out on May 7th. Very exciting. So tell us about your decision to release the book in the month of May.
So, that's a complicated it's a complicated decision because it's not entirely me. It has to do with publishing and their schedules and when they put out, their biggest books of the year and when, what else that they have going on. You're a little bit at the mercy of that. But it's so cool that it's AAPI month, like that it comes out in a month where, quite frankly, adoptees are often overlooked. It's kind of like you're not fish and you're not fowl, you're neither. So you are left off of lists. You're, people who are very well-meaning are coming up with AAPI lists, and they would rather include people who have never been in America than they would adoptees, because I think it's part of which is the name. The name's not doesn't strike you as extremely Asian, and so you're like, oh, well, maybe they're not. You'd have to kind of either know about that author or look it up, which is another step, I guess, than somebody who has a traditionally Chinese name or a traditional Korean name.
We just thought that was so cool that it ended up coming out that same month. And I'm sure that's also very, very cool to, a lot of people in the Asian culture. And it's, something that maybe they don't see a lot. Maybe they don't have a lot of, author inspiration. So yeah, I thought that was very exciting.
I was actually just talking to Jun Her. She writes Korean historical fiction in YA. And both of our books, so Barnes and Noble's having their big pre-order sale right
Oh,
now.
nice.
It's, I think today's like the last day. But both of our books are on like that Green Banner bestseller top 100. And I'm like, could you have imagined when we were teenagers, like seeing not one, but two Korean authors, Korean inspired books on the Barnes and Noble bestseller list? She's like, never, not even close.
That has to feel amazing.
Yeah,
That
that
is
is
so
such a
cool.
cool, I bet that's such a surreal moment.
It is. And the nicest thing about it, honestly, is that there won't be other little girls or boys growing up and not seeing themselves reflected on the page.
Yeah, that is huge, especially for, future aspiring authors, and it's going to give them that push that they need to get started in something they're passionate about.
So just kind of branching off of that, what are you the most excited for with the release of this book?
I mean, so there's so much like stress and tension in like the ramp up and like waiting for it to be May 7th. So like I'm just kind of pretty excited for it to be May 7th. But like I'm so excited to see, like we love sending the books to Bookstagrammers and the TikTok influencers, and watching BookTok get really excited about it has been incredible. But like it'll be a different level when people can just go pick it up in the store, and we get to hear from more casual readers and people discovering the book the same way that they have with other Red Tower releases. I feel like Red Tower very much appeals to people who are more reluctant readers, who are not people with a 1,000 book TBR. They're more like, oh, well, that looks cool, and I've heard my friends talking about it, so maybe I'll go pick it up. Oh no, now I'm a fantasy girly, and now I have a home library. Yes, so
Now you're
I
800
like
books deep.
that.
That
It's a
has it
slippery
happens to the
slope.
best of us. Yeah. On the flip side, do you have something that you're nervous for with the release of this book?
I think you're always like, I hope people love it. Like I always like, you accept that not everybody loves everything, that like art is incredibly subjective and writing is art. And so there's always going to be people who it's not for them. And that's okay. And like you kind of keep telling yourself like art is subjective and that's okay. So like that's a little bit concerning. And then, there's the horror of being perceived as I have to go like do festivals and whatever. But we're so excited. You know, the publisher and I have talked and we're like, is it May yet? Like, we are just so excited for it to come out and be on shelves.
Well, I think that's so cool, like how big of like an influence social media has on that too, and either a good way or a bad way, but just, you know, already seeing it like being promoted, like you said, on TikTok, on X, on whatever it is, like it's just getting people so hyped, and I think that's just one more like level of excitement to add with the beginning of that journey there.
It's so cool. I'm tagged all the time on Instagram and I love it every time, like seeing people unbox it or seeing people review it. And everybody's been super kind, you know, knock wood. And like, if you didn't like it, like, just don't tell me.
Don't
like,
tell me.
Don't tell me. Just be like, no, I didn't get it. But no, it's actually been so, so nice. And people have been really, really great. And it's like a little fever dream, right? Because I went through this already with YA and middle grade. And it's like, you know, the book comes out, it's like, like there's no ramp up, there's no hype, there's no, because I wasn't a lead title in with those books. So it was just a different, and it's a different space because you're not, YA a little bit, but with especially middle grade, you're not going direct to the consumer. So whereas adults, you go directly to the adults, like, so you go directly to TikTok, to Instagram, and those are the people who are going to be reading the actual thing that you made. In children's literature, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah.
You're trying to get to the parents or the librarians or the school teachers or whoever the gatekeeper is to then get to your reader. It's a different model.
Yeah, that's a whole new world when it comes to adults.
Yes, yes. And I like it because you like the gloves are off, right? You don't have to, you're dealing with people who have a level of life experience where you don't have to sugarcoat things. Like, people will understand the world in such a way where this is not going to be their first rodeo. Yeah. They're like, no, I get it. I understand love. I understand loss. I understand, you know, justifying things to myself that are not maybe great. And it's such a good way to be able to write.
Absolutely. And I know you mentioned earlier that you just got the green light to start working on potentially a new writing project. Are there any other new projects that you're working on right now?
So my editor has book two.
Okay.
She's halfway through. She's like, I'm loving it, which I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so relieved because yes. Like the alternative is like walking into the sea. Like, I have no other idea. I'm so glad that you like it. Because I've never written a sequel. So there's always that like that fear that, you know, you're going to give your editor something and they're gonna be like, WTF is this? Like, what is this? What did you do? So yeah, the fact that I was extremely relieved when she started reading and she was like, oh, I love it.
That is great.
So, yeah, we will finish up the five. So we have a series title now. It's called, yeah. So this is brand new information for everybody. It's called The Broken Blades Trilogy now.
Okay.
We went back and forth on a variety of titles for the series. But I think that's the simplest one for everybody to remember. And it unites the three books very well. Yeah. So that trilogy will be finished before the new series comes out. I am definitely one of those readers that I want the first series done. Like, it's very nice for you to have new series, especially if I like that author, but like, finish your series. Like, don't
yes.
Don't R.R. Martin everybody and not finish the series.
Nothing more frustrating.
Yeah, we have personal beef with some authors who we don't know, but
it's personal. Been waiting 12 years for your series to be completed, but it's fine.
Yeah, I'm like, no, we're not going to do that. So it'll be complete before the end of 2025.
Oh, wow.
That's so awesome.
That's soon.
So exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yes, readers are going to appreciate that very much.
Well, we appreciate that very much.
Yes.
You will not. I mean, we have to like get our calendars together and everything, but you will not be waiting very long for the next book.
Yay.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Amazing. I'm so glad to hear that. And May, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Absolutely. This was so much fun.
Where are some places that readers can find you online, or do you, I mean, use social media quite a bit?
Yeah, more than I should.
Awesome,
So I'm mostly on Instagram.
awesome.
I have TikTok, but it's mainly just to creep. Like, it's not really a.
Same.
I think I will be posting the character cards, which I have in my hand. Yes. So I commissioned character cards to be done by I'm gonna butcher her last name, and like she's a friend of mine, but like I don't ever refer to her by her last name. Anyhow, her name's Jen. And she's an incredible artist. I wound up actually finding her I think it may have still been Twitter. It might have already become X, which is whatever. And then realizing that like we live 20 minutes apart.
Oh,
So we are
cool. That's
two
awesome.
Korean adoptees who found each other online and live 20 minutes apart. And actually, she lives around the corner from my mother, which is
Whoa.
like,
Oh
yeah,
my
I'm like, this woman's gonna think I'm stalking her, but like, I really didn't know any of this beforehand. But so she did these amazing character cards, and there's six of them. And so I'll post some video, like in my head, it's going to be a beautiful video, but like I don't
Yes.
really know how to post to TikTok, so whatever. We will figure this out, but it's every one of the narrators. And then there are 4x6 cards, and one will come with every order from Northshire. That's my local indie. I wanted to do something special for them because they've been so supportive through the whole author process. So yeah, the books that are ordered from them will come signed and with one of the character cards.
How cool.
Cool.
That's
And character
awesome.
cards are just so helpful. So Caitlin and I, we both struggle with aphantasia. And so we have a really hard time like picturing characters or faces and stuff like that. And so
Oh, that's so interesting.
anytime we can find like character art or fan art or whatever, it helps us so much to like even, you know, immerse ourselves even more into the story.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we always have to like be careful too with fan art because sometimes it's not
We
spoiler
spoil
free.
it. Well, thank you so much again, May, for being on the show today. Five Broken Blades is out now. You can get your copy. Where is it available? Everywhere?
So it's available everywhere. And if you order from Northshire, Saratoga, it comes with signed and with a character card.
All right. Thank you so much, May.
Thank you for having me.
That wraps up our interview with May Corlin. Join us next week as we do a little mid-year book check, and I get to tell you all how far behind I am on my reading goal.
You'll catch up by then, I already know. And by next week. And the week
Yeah.
after, we will be discussing Funny Story by Emily Henry, her newest release. We actually have pre-ordered our copies already,
We
so.
have special signed copies from Miss Henry herself.
From my mother, Emily, I love you so much. Okay, well, start reading that one, everyone. We'll talk to you next time, and as always.
Let's get lit.